Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, July 17th, 2025. We'll start with an article on the front page headlined, Decatur Area Arts Council, Making Art, Classes Hit the Mark with Seniors, by Danette Beckett, Decatur. Learning how to draw, paint, and sculpt isn't just for kids. The Decatur Area Arts Council, located at 125 North Water Street, has art classes for various ages, including senior citizens. Julie Jean travels approximately 45 minutes from Ivesdale to attend the weekday senior art class on Wednesday mornings. "I enjoy art," she said. "I thought I should go try it out and see what the Arts Council is like." Approximately 10 seniors meet during the five-week sessions to learn artistic techniques, all while socializing. Some of the recent classes have included pastels and watercolors. "We have learned various media to see what interests us the most," Jean said. One of the classes included sketching, a medium Jean admits wasn't her favorite. "But I did enjoy that she showed us more techniques to help where I could do it better, so that I'm not as intimidated by it," she said. According to Executive Director Jamie Fawley, the Arts Council is committed to creating a wide selection of programs for various populations. The senior citizen programs have become a recent focus. "We started that this summer," she said. "We have another session coming up in September." Although potential students can view the current options, the instructors and directors want to know what they should focus on. "We're really interested in what people want to learn," Fawley said. Project-based classes may work on a specific piece. Skill-building classes teach artistic techniques. "So it's a time to really focus on those art-making skills," Fawley said. "It also provides a little community time for our senior population." Leah Cameron, 28, has taught art to various populations in the community, including children and special needs adults. "I think everyone's an artist and everyone has some level of creativity," she said. "My goal is to bring that out of people, then also give them the skill set to feel confident with making art." According to Cameron, the lack of knowledge often makes the student apprehensive, even scared to try. "When you have some of those foundational skills, people are more apt to create in their own time because they feel more confident." To build that confidence, the instructor starts with a foundation. Cameron, however, approaches working with adults compared to children differently. "Kids will just try stuff," she said. "Adults, you have to pull that out a little bit more." The senior classes are also ideal for socializing. Leslie Ross was invited to one of the recent sessions by a friend. "We had been doing art projects outside of this," she said. "So when a friend saw this online, we all said, sure, let's sign up." The classes meet in the late morning, ending just before lunchtime. "Coney's, McCain, gets our business," Ross said about the downtown Decatur restaurant located a couple of blocks from the Decatur Area Arts Council. "Gotta have that pie, you know." Decatur Area Arts Council classes. To learn more about the various art classes at the Decatur Area Arts Council, visit the website at www.decaturarts.org. This article is accompanied by three full-color photos attributed to Joseph Ressler Photos, Herald and Review. The first shows a classroom with mostly women doing art of some sort and is captioned, "Stephanie Dixon and Leslie Ross practice watercolor techniques at the Decatur Area Arts Council's weekly senior art series in Decatur on Wednesday, July 16th. The second is captioned, "Denise Lohman of Argenta learns various watercolor techniques at the Decatur Area Arts Council's weekly senior art series in Decatur on Wednesday, July 16th. "It's fun," said Lohman. "We can be silly and not so structured." And the third photo, which shows a close-up of a painting of a leaf, is captioned, "After learning the many techniques of watercolor, students practice a painting at the Decatur Area Arts Council's weekly senior art series in Decatur on Wednesday, July 16th. Decatur Schools, search for superintendent could start in August. Illinois Association of School Boards makes pitch to assist, by Valerie Wells, Decatur. The search for a new superintendent for Decatur Public Schools could begin as early as the first week of August. Superintendent Rochelle Clark announced several months ago that she would retire effective June 30th, 2026. At Tuesday's school board meeting, the board listened to a presentation by Jim Helton from the Illinois Association of School Boards on how that organization could help with the search process for a successor to Clark. The IASB would handle surveys of stakeholders such as parents, staff, and business people, advertising the position after those surveys reveal the important qualities the community wants in the next superintendent, and winnowing the applicants down to a final group for interviews. One of the services the IASB provides, Helton said, is checking to ensure applicants have the necessary credentials to serve. Our last search was chaotic and embarrassing, said board member Will Wetzel. We had a search firm bring forward a candidate who was not qualified to take that position. That firm, Hazard, Young, Atia, and Associates, which had served the district several times before, offered two finalists for consideration in the 2021-22 school year. Board members have already raised questions about the qualifications of one of those candidates, Michael Gall, who had participated in an online community forum. Then board member Kevin Collins said he did not see how Gall, who had no teaching experience, could possibly obtain a superintendent certification in Illinois. Gall's most recent jobs, according to information Hazard, Young, Atea, and Associates provided the Decatur School Board at the time, were president of sales, Biable Education, Lakewood, New Jersey, and former deputy chancellor of District of Columbia Public Schools in Washington, D.C. His master's degrees were not in education, but in engineering and national security policy. Gall ultimately withdrew his name from consideration, and the other finalist, Malika Savoy Brooks, told the board she would not accept the position unless the board was unanimous in its approval of her for the job, which it was not. The search firm waived the final payment of $24,950 from Decatur Public Schools since their search had not resulted in a hired superintendent, and the board chose district employee Clark, who had not been one of the applicants during the search. Helton assured the board that the IASB would not present any candidates who had not been thoroughly vetted, and the organization also offers, for an extra fee, coaching for board members in conducting interviews with candidates. The IASB's fee for conducting the search is $10,400, with various optional add-ons like the interview coaching. That will be considerably less than Hazard, Young, Atea's nearly $100,000 fee. Additionally, he said, if their search does not produce a candidate that stays with the district for the life of his or her first contract, typically 3 years, they will repeat the entire process for no charge. The board could not vote to proceed at Tuesday's meeting because it was not an agenda item, only a discussion item. But board president Bill Clevenger said if the board was agreeable, it will be on the August 5th agenda for a vote. The school board's August meetings will be held on the first and third Tuesdays of the month in August, rather than the customary second and fourth Tuesdays. In other business, the board approved a tentative budget for the Macon-Piatt Special Education District, with a public hearing set for 6:30 p.m. Tuesday, August 19th. Decatur Public Schools is the fiscal agent for Macon-Piatt. The board also heard a presentation on the process of American Dreamer STEM Academy's transition to the new Dansby Magnet School, which will open next month. Several events are planned to lead into that opening, including an orientation for middle school students July 28th through 30th. sixth grade on July 28th, seventh grade July 29th, and eighth grade July 30th. Popcorn with the principal at 5:30 p.m. Friday, August 1st, for new families. A practice run for walkers and bicycle riders at 8:30 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. on August 8th to let students find out how long it really takes to get to school from home. Kindergarten signing day at 5:30 p.m. August 8th, when the youngest students will be sorted into one of the school's four houses. And Dansby registration reward night at 7 p.m. Friday, August 1st, at Splash Cove for students who are fully registered by then. If students are not registered in time, Principal Rita Ellis said, the staff will be there with computers and mobile hotspots to get them registered. A ribbon cutting will be held at the school at 4:30 p.m. August 12th, with an open house following. The first day of classes for Decatur schools will be Wednesday, August 13th. U.S. Government, Consumer Watchdog Agency Quiet, by Ken Sweet, Associated Press, New York. The lights are on at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, across the street from the White House, and employees still get paid. But in practice, the Bureau has been mostly inoperable for nearly 6 months. CFPB employees say they essentially spend the workday sitting on their hands, forbidden from doing any work by directive from the White House. The Bureau is supposed to be helping oversee the nation's banks and financial services companies and taking enforcement action in case of wrongdoing. During its 15-year existence, the CFPB has returned roughly $21 billion to consumers who were cheated by financial services companies. Instead, its main function now seems to be undoing the rulemaking and law enforcement work that was done under previous administrations, including in President Donald Trump's first term. One current employee who spoke on condition of anonymity because the directive forbids staffers from speaking publicly about their jobs said outsiders would be amazed at how little work is being done. Employees are reluctant even to talk to one another out of fear that a conversation between two employees would be considered a violation of the directive. Another employee described the drastic shift in mission from trying to protect consumers to doing nothing as quite demoralizing. To gain an understanding of what is happening inside the CFPB, the Associated Press spoke with 10 current and former employees, as well as bankers and policymakers who used to interact with the Bureau nearly every day, but now say their emails and voicemails go into a black hole. The agency's press office doesn't respond to emails. The CFPB took a lighter approach to its mission in Trump's first term, but continued to pursue enforcement actions. Under President Joe Biden, the agency took an expansive view of its authority, targeting profitable practices by banks such as overdraft and credit card late fees, as well as investigating companies over credit reporting and medical debt. The Bureau also turned a spotlight on big tech companies that have made inroads into financial services. For example, the CFPB ordered Apple to pay $89 million in fines and penalties for problems related to the Apple Card. Banks and the financial services industry felt the Biden CFPB acted too aggressively, particularly with a proposal to cut overdraft fees to $5 from the industry average of $27 to $35. The Bureau estimated the move would save consumers roughly $5 billion a year. The proposal was overturned by Congress in April with Trump's backing. Once Trump 2.0 began, the Bureau became a main target of the Department of Government Efficiency, then run by Elon Musk. Through the Bureau's acting chief, Russell Voigt, the White House issued a directive that CFPB employees should not perform any work tasks. The administration then tried to lay off roughly 90% of the Bureau's staff, or roughly 1,500 employees. Courts have blocked those layoffs, but there is a feeling inside the Bureau that the court rulings are only a temporary reprieve. Companies that committed wrongdoing or had open investigations have lobbied the Bureau and the White House for their punishments to be rescinded. Last month, the CFPB rescinded an agreement under which Navy Federal Credit Union agreed to pay $80 million to settle claims that it illegally charged overdraft fees to its members, who include Navy servicemen and women and veterans. In mid-May, the agency scrapped an order for the auto financing arm of Toyota to pay customers a total of $48 million for illegally bundling products onto car buyers' auto loans. Companies are lining up to get out of repaying harmed customers, said Eric Halperin, former enforcement director at the Bureau, who resigned earlier this year. The Associated Press sent a list of questions to the White House regarding President Trump's vision for the CFPB. The White House did not respond. While the lack of new initiatives and the scuttling of old ones frustrate employees the most, they also note that even everyday tasks have largely fallen to the wayside. A report from the office of Senator Elizabeth Warren, the senior Democrat on the Senate Banking Committee, found that the Bureau is uploading roughly 2,200 complaints a day to its complaint database, compared to the roughly 10,500 complaints it was doing in the months before Trump took office again. Warren came up with the idea for the Bureau when she was a law professor at Harvard University. The Bureau did take an enforcement action on Friday. The pawn shop chain First Cash Inc. agreed to pay $9 million to settle claims that it charged excessive interest rates on loans to armed service members in violation of the Military Lending Act. First Cash operates more than 1,000 stores. The Bureau is going to be even further diminished in the coming months. The new budget law signed by Trump earlier this month cuts the CFPB's funding by roughly half, meaning the Bureau will be forced into mass layoffs. Senate Democrats are looking for ways to restore that funding. Oriana Mann, accused of repeated child sex abuse, by Tony Reed, Oriana. An Oriana Mann is facing charges he repeatedly raped a 15-year-old girl after forming a relationship with her and threatened to kill the child and himself if she cheated on him, police allege. Richard A. Boline, 51, is accused of having unprotected sex with the victim over several months and supplying her with Plan B pills to prevent the child from becoming pregnant, according to sworn affidavits from the Macon County Sheriff's Office. Police said the full extent of the crimes now charged against Boline took some time to discover. He was initially arrested July 9th on weapons charges and harassment via electronic communication, and granted pretrial release. But he was rearrested July 11th as evidence of sex crimes became clear, including allegations he groomed the girl to entice her into a sexual relationship and encouraged her to send him pornographic pictures of herself. He is also charged with sending her pictures of his genitalia. Boline appeared Monday in Macon County Circuit Court, where he was arraigned on 6 counts of aggravated criminal sexual abuse, 2 counts of child porn possession, and 1 charge of indecent solicitation. He's also charged with the offense of grooming and faces charges of the illegal possession of a firearm and possession of a stolen gun. Investigators said they combed through cell phone records and found disturbing messages sent to and from the child. Richard sends a photograph of a black high-point pistol, and an additional silver pistol is observed, said Detective Drake Lambden with the sheriff's office. This photo is sent with the message, "Don't chet on me." The child replied, "I won't. Is that for me? Cheat, I die?" "Richard, we both do, but yes, you first." The girl's family had contacted police July 1st after they said they became aware of the sexual relationship. Questioned by police, the child said the relationship started in early May and the sexual encounters would take place at Boline's Oriana home. She also stated that she could not recall how many times that she and Richard had engaged in intercourse due to the numerous times it had occurred, said Lambden. After Boline's arrest, police said they seized 3 handguns from his home, including a silver 25-caliber pistol found tucked under the pillow of his bed. this gun checked as being stolen in Decatur. Assistant Macon County State's Attorney Cadmus Hicks told Judge Rodney Forbes at Monday's hearing that Boline was just too dangerous to remain on pretrial release. Hicks noted the seriousness of the sex charges and the involvement of guns and threatening messages. And so we have ongoing safety concerns for the victim, and concerns the victim might continue to be a victim under these circumstances, he added. Chief Public Defender Michelle Sanders counter-argued that Boline had been trusted with pretrial release before and could be trusted again. She said the previous condition of having no contact with the victim was a good enough safeguard, and Boline was willing to accept any additional conditions the court deems appropriate. Forbes, however, said Boline must remain in the custody of the Macon County Jail because no release conditions he could impose would mitigate the real and present threat if the defendant was freed. Boline is due back in court July 23rd for a preliminary hearing, when he will enter pleas to the charges. Mattoon. Mattoon Bagel Fest on, with water alert. All water and ice used by vendors to be outsourced. By Rob Stroud, Mattoon. Bagel Fest is set to proceed without the use of city water while the reissued unsafe water alert for Mattoon is in place. The Mattoon Tourism Office has provided additional information about its safety measures, including that all water and ice used by vendors will be safely outsourced. We understand the anxiety and the uncertainty surrounding the ongoing water situation in Mattoon. In light of recent developments, we want to share some important information and offer reassurance about safety measures in place for Bagel Fest, the Tourism Office reported in a news release. What to know about Mattoon reissuing its unsafe water alert? The city reissued the alert late Tuesday, July 15th. The announcement comes 2 days after the city rescinded a previous unsafe water alert that was in place from Thursday, July 10th, until Sunday, July 13th. Continued testing of the city's treated water showed a harmful algal bloom neurological toxin to be at 0.38 parts per billion level, and the advisory level for a do not drink order is 0.3 parts per billion. The dermal limit, what's safe for skin, is 1.6 for adults and 0.3 for children. The most recent reading is higher than the level of 0.35 that prompted the original order. Mattoon Tourism reported that no food vendor at Bagel Fest will be using Mattoon City water for any purpose, including food preparation, drinks, or hand washing. All water used by vendors will be safely outsourced, including any ice used. All hand washing stations throughout the park will be supplied with non-Mattoon water. Most are provided by Harrelson Plumbing of Mattoon, who have confirmed their water source is Clear Water Service Corp. While the current notice has only warned against drinking, we are taking steps to ensure all water being used here in the park is 100% safe, the Bagel Fest release reported. Tourism and Arts Director Angelia Burgett said on Wednesday that the city will be bringing in a large tank of water and making sure all vendors have access to this supply. Jamie Martin of West Frankfort, who operates a food and drink stand every year at Bagel Fest, said she had been monitoring the news in Mattoon before arriving there, and is relieved that the city has a plan in place because her booth relies on city water. They have really tried hard to make it work, Martin said, adding that she looks forward to selling Philly cheesesteaks, corn dogs, and lemon shakeups to her regular Bagel Fest customers. We enjoy coming here, and it's a good festival for us. Mattoon Tourism reported that the Lenders and Thomas's Bagels provided by Bimbo Bakery's USA plant in Mattoon are safe to eat. It added that Bimbo has gone above and beyond to outsource safe water in large tanks for production. Large quantities of Bimbo's products are set to be given out during the world's biggest bagel breakfast from 7:30 to 9:30 a.m. Saturday in Peterson Park's DeMars Center, and then during the parade at 10:30 a.m. from downtown to Peterson Park. This is a constantly evolving situation, and like all of you, we are adjusting in real time. We began planning for this the moment when the first advisory was issued last Friday, Mattoon Tourism reported. Our goal remains clear: keep Bagelfest safe, fun, and running smoothly. Mattoon Tourism reported that it is grateful and proud for the love, patience, and support this community continues to show one another. Our incredible Parks Department staff, volunteers, and team members are working tirelessly behind the scenes to make this year's Bagelfest both enjoyable and safe for everyone, Mattoon Tourism reported. We will continue to provide updates as the situation evolves. Thank you for your patience, your understanding, and your support. Burgett said on Wednesday that she has received offers of help from individuals and organizations from Mattoon and from neighboring communities. People are really working together in this situation, she said. I am just very grateful. Western Illinois. 66 pounds of cocaine seized in I-72 bust by David C.L. Bauer, Jacksonville Journal-Courier, Jacksonville. A New Mexico truck driver remains jailed in Morgan County after being charged in a high-profile drug bust along Interstate 72. Sheriff's deputies said they stopped a Freightliner semi-trailer truck Thursday afternoon and found about 30 kilograms, more than 66 pounds, of powder cocaine in the cab of the vehicle. The cocaine has a street value of about $3 million, according to deputies. Jose Cleofas Ciraceras, 42, of Deming, New Mexico, was arrested of trafficking in a controlled substance, possession of a controlled substance, and manufacturing or delivering a controlled substance, according to a Morgan County Sheriff's Department report. Gas station heroin is technically illegal and widely available. Here are the facts. Ciraceras was being held in the Morgan County Jail and awaiting a detention hearing. Other court information was unavailable. Deputies were assisted by members of the Central Illinois Enforcement Group and Illinois State Police. The section of interstate through Morgan County has seen a number of significant drug arrests by Morgan County deputies. Among them was the discovery of about 22 pounds of cocaine, worth $1 million, during a routine April 2021 traffic stop, and one in October 2022 that uncovered 542 pounds of marijuana, valued at more than $2 million. Royal Stars by Georgia Nichols. Happy birthday for Thursday, July 17th, 2025. You are friendly, easygoing, and sympathetic. You're affectionate to those who are close. This is a year of service, perhaps to family. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5, dynamic. 4, positive. 3, average. 2, so-so. 1, difficult. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half of the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, July 17th, 2025. Please stay tuned.